We're continuing our class on the Jewish home, what we had seen so far. We discussed a little bit about the best, sweetest, most wonderful thing being marriage. We discussed that it's not easy, it doesn't come naturally, it requires investment, it requires work. We discussed the idea that our needs are different, and that if you try to give her what you need, you're not necessarily going to make her happy. We discussed that the differences between men and women is something that builds us. We discussed our different needs and our different frame of reference in conversation and in the relationship, honor versus love. And we discussed that it takes one to tango. We discussed the idea that sometimes the marriage rests on your shoulders and you say, I'm giving in and I'm doing everything and it's only because of me this is working, and that's perfectly okay. So fine, so you think so, fine. There's no limit to how much you should give, just give some more. I guess we're going to pick up here with a story. And the topic I want us to reach today is a topic that the Talmud discusses, that the Midrash discusses, the idea of Tova'at Balev. That men and women are different in that men are more open about what they want, and women are longing for something in their heart but are not going to express it as openly as men, and we'll get there. So, but let's first pick up with the idea we discussed about giving and giving and giving. So very often people quote Rav Arush's book, and I have a difficult time agreeing and disagreeing with the book, because I think educationally the book is very good, but he sets an ideal which I don't agree with. I don't think it's the middle ground, but I think that when the world is off to the right, you have to push to the left to get them to the middle, and that's what his book does. The Garden of Peace. The Gan HaShalom. Yeah. So, there's a husband who gets up in the morning. It's 6:15. He leaves the house. Everyone's sleeping. Every kid is in his bed. The dishes are done. The house is clean. At 6:15, he's happy. He's getting up early. Everyone else is sleeping. And he's happy to see his wife sleeping. And he slowly tiptoes out of the house, takes his towels and film, takes his bag to work, and closes the door behind him. He goes to the car, pulls out, goes out to daven. At 6:17, the baby wakes up wailing and wakes up everyone else in the room. The kids run in and start pouncing on his wife. The kid cracks her glasses, and she wakes up groggily, to hear the baby wailing. She goes, fumbles for her glasses, sees that the lens is cracked. Now she's going to have to see through a cracked lens the whole day. And the baby's wailing. The five-year-old decided he's helping himself to cereal. So he takes the cereal and takes the milk and starts pouring milk on the floor. She's going to deal with the wailing baby, and in the kitchen there's milk on the floor. The seven-year-old says, no, we're making eggs for breakfast. Forget the milk, forget the cereal. Takes the eggs out of the fridge to help mommy and drops some eggs on the floor, and now you have eggs and milk on the floor. She's still dealing with the wailing baby. She hasn't had a chance to brush her teeth or wash her hands or wash her face, and she's trying to calm down the baby to figure out what he wants, and she realizes the baby has diarrhea and the bed is all disgusting and pajamas are all disgusting, and she has a load of work ahead of her. So she's trying to calm the baby as she's getting herself all filthy. She hasn't yet washed her hands or face or brushed her teeth, and the kids are in the kitchen wrecking havoc, and they're, Ima, Ima, there's eggs on the floor. Chaim took out the eggs. And she's looking, and she says, guys, drop the eggs, leave the milk, and come to the other room. So, of course, they drop the eggs and leave the milk. And now the milk is spreading all over the kitchen in the other room. And they walk into the other room. And little does she know, they're bringing a trail of raw eggs and milk to the other room. She looks at them and they say, right, we're a help, Ima. And she has to muster a smile and say, thank you so much. But maybe tomorrow we'll do this together. Now the kids are, Ima, we're hungry. And she's, 1 second, I got to change a diaper. But Ima, we're hungry. Can we go and eat the cereal already? And she says, wait 1 second. The sister wakes up and she has fever and she looks at her mother. She says, Mommy, I'm not feeling well. My stomach's really bad. Ima says, why don't you go to the bathroom and see if you feel a little bit better? And then she tries to change the diaper. As she's changing the diaper, she hears her daughter's vomiting. And she cleans the diaper, changes the clothing, goes to the kitchen, and the kids are nagging at her. Ima, we're hungry. She looks at her watch, and 5 minutes, the bus is coming, and the kid hasn't even gotten dressed. So with a mad rush, she tells her daughter in the bathroom, honey, I'll be with you in 1 second. And the daughter's crying because the poor kid has a fever and she's vomiting. And the other kid has the bus coming in 5 minutes. She runs out, says, do me a favor, go get dressed quickly. I'll put your cereal in a bag. I'll make your lunch. She's barely had a chance to brush her teeth and wash her face. But the house is a rush. It's 7:30 in the morning. She's still in her nightgown and her husband's ringing on the phone. And the answering goes, the machine goes off and his perky voice comes on. Honey, I hope you got up already. Got up already? She's looking at her watch. I've been up since 6:17. And he says, you know, I had to get out really early at 6:15. It was so nice to see the calm house, see everyone sleeping. I wonder why you don't have a second to pick up the phone. And she's looking around her, the mess, the kids. Honey, everything okay? She can't pick up the phone. You know, she's dealing with the kids. The bus is going to be here in 2 minutes. And he's like, okay, I hope you're getting a good nap while I'm gone. It's okay, I'm at work. Hope you're having a good day. And he hangs up. And she barely, her tongue's out. She's barely gotten the cereal to lunch. The kid's dressed. She puts him out the door. She's coming back. There's vomit to deal with. Her daughter, the other two kids, Ima, we're hungry. Just a second. Got to go wipe the child. Talk to them. Calm them down. Hold them. There's still the floor to be wiped. Calms them down. Comes back. Says, okay, you know, let's get dressed. Let's get our day started. And the kid's lying in bed, not feeling well. So you got to bring something to put down the fever. Takes the other two kids, wipes up the floor, prepares them lunch, prepares them breakfast. Now she has a chance to wash her face, brush her teeth. But the kid's in the other room crying, so she has to sit with her. Meanwhile, she tries to get the two little ones dressed. Fine, she gets them dressed. It's 8:05, her husband's calling again. The daughter's starting to vomit again. She can't get the phone. Honey, I'm wondering, did you get up yet? Is everything okay? And she's hearing his perky voice over there, and she's, did I get up yet? Is he kidding? Is he joking? Okay, fine. She rushes out with the kids. She's asking herself, should I take this one to the doctor or not? And as she's taking the kids to their schools, the phone rings. It's her cell phone. It's her husband. Honey, is everything okay? Well, I can't get into it. You know, things are a little hectic now. And her husband is calmly saying, you know, why are you so harried? Why does everything seem to pull you down? You know what? I really don't have time now. We'll talk, okay? Fine. Have a great day. She doesn't want to burden him. Fine. She's running with the kids. She brings this one to school, that one to school. She's still got to get to work at 9:30. What's she going to do with the sick kid now? So she's racking her head. Am I going to get a babysitter? Am I bringing her to work for me? Am I going to take a sick day off? And the girl seems to be much better. And she says, you know what? I could sit with the babysitter. I'm fine. You go. So, fine, she leaves the kid. The babysitter rushes off to work. She stops and asks herself, did I take a drink this morning? Did I eat anything? Did I really clean up that mess? Or am I leaving the babysitter with that mess? No, I think I cleaned it up. Okay, she hasn't had a chance to take a breath or think. She gets to work. Her boss is upset. She's missed the deadline. She's running late. She works all morning. She rushes back home. The kids are coming home. Her daughter isn't feeling well again. She's got to be out there to pick him up, take him off the bus, bring him into the house, feed them. Turns out the little one still has diarrhea by the time he gets home from daycare. All his clothing are soiled. She's got to deal with that. Of course, she's dealing with this kid and that kid. And you understand the way her day looks. Finally, comes 6 o'clock at night. She's put the kids to bed. She quickly rushes, puts up hot water. She wants to put up some noodles. She starts mopping up the floor from the last time the kid vomited. She cleaned the beds, she put up the load, she's cleaning the linen, and her husband pulls into the driveway. Now, she's had a day, but by the time he comes in, he slowly tiptoes in to the same scene he left that morning. He sees the kids calmly lying in bed. His wife seems a little harried, and she hasn't had a normal meal that day, but He walks in, slumps down into a chair, says, "Honey, boy, did I have a date today." "You seem to have had such a nice, peaceful time today." He's looking at all the kids lying peacefully in bed. He doesn't know how many of those sheets she had to launder. He doesn't know how many times she had to mop the floor, clean the kids, feed the kids, deal with a yelling boss, deal with his messages. And she looks at him and he says, "Why can't you have a smile on your face when I come home from work? I've been working all day." The nature of men, as we see from the beginning of time, is that they don't have appreciation. We don't begin to understand what our wives are doing. We have a lot of good advice, and we really think we know what we're talking about, but we don't. Every so often, I get the opportunity to take over the house. When my wife gives birth, my wife was on a pregnancy watch, so suddenly I had to take over. And I always appreciate those times, because as much as I think I've learned it before, until you're there doing it, you know, I got myself one of those robes the gananot have, they have in daycare. I went out and bought one because my wife was on maternity watch. You know, she had to be in the hospital, and I had to take care of the kids. So after 3 days, each day showing up, teaching, totally soiled clothing. And you have to understand, each day I changed my clothing twice with the kids. I got dressed in the morning. They'd come to me with their peanut butter hands. And, you know, I can't go to school. I can't go teach like that. You change your shirt. You change your pants. You're ready to walk them out the door. And they figure they got to check what you made them for lunch. They stick their hand in. And then they say, "Abba." And there you go again. You don't have the time to change again. So I got myself one of those long robes, you know, like a doctor's gown. And when I deal with the kids, I get that all dirty. And but a mother can't do that. You're a mother. We don't begin to appreciate. So when I say give and give, and that's because I've seen over the years that men, you know, you think I've given an extreme story? No. It's a classical story. Men come home at night and they don't begin to understand, what have you been doing all day? I know I've been working hard, but what do you do all day? We don't understand the pressures of running a house. We don't understand the difficulties, and we don't have appreciation. Adam HaRishon is described by the Medrash as Kafui Tova. It says when they built the Tower of Babel, so here they were rebelling against God. They didn't have appreciation for what they had. So the Torah describes who came to build the Tower of Babel. Bnei Ha'adam. The Torah describes the Son of Man. Vayered Hashem Elokim. God descended. Lir'ot et ha'ir v'amigdal. To see the city and tower. Asher banu, that built. Bnei Ha'adam. The sons of man. Comes the Medrash and says, why are they described as the sons of man? To tell you that they were just like the first man. Like Adam HaRishon. Just as the first man lacked appreciation for his wife, and that led him ultimately to a lack of appreciation to his creator, so to these people, they didn't know what appreciation was, and that led them to a lack of appreciation of their creator, to the point where they were willing to rebel against him. So, this is a recurring theme in the Torah about us men, that this is our weakness, one of our weaknesses, that we don't know how to have appreciation. And what we sense very vividly is ourselves. But we don't begin to understand who she is, what she's going through, and what her needs are. And that leads us to the topic of today, which is Tovat Balev, the woman's tendency to desire things in her heart and not express them overtly. And one of the common quotes you'll hear is how men say, "Why are you so complicated? Why can't you just tell me what you want?" In Hebrew they say, "Tomrin li dugri." In English you say, "Why don't you say it plainly? Tell me what you want. Spell it out."
Dugri?
Dugri in Hebrew, yeah. How many times do men say, "Why didn't you tell me in the first place that this was what you wanted?" Classical scenario. You agree with your wife, you're going out. You don't agree where you're going out to. You come home, you get ready, and you think you're going out to place A, we'll say the pizza place. And she says, where are we going tonight? And you say, well, I thought the pizza place. And she says, well, I was thinking the falafel, but not, no, sorry. She says, and you think the pizza place or the falafel place? And you say, the pizza place. Or, you're more adept than that, and you say, well, what do you want? And she says, I have no preference, what do you want? So you say, the pizza place. And she says, okay. And then you go, and it doesn't exactly work out as planned. And then she says, well, you took me here kicking and screaming. And you say, excuse me? Wait a second, I asked you what you want. And she says, right. And she's upset, and you don't understand what she wants from your life. True story. I'm walking out of a hall, and there's a bus stop. And there's a, you walk out of the hall, you go to the right down the sidewalk, you get to the bus stop. But then to the left, you had this whole long circular winding path that leads to the same bus stop. So we're walking out the door, and the wife says to her husband, which way do you suggest we go to the bus stop? So he looks at her and says, that way. Very simple. You asked. I told you. What's the question? Tova'at balid. Hashem created women, as the Midrash says and the Talmud says, that a woman desires in her heart and does not express things overtly. The Talmud says it with regard to intimacy. The Talmud says the nature of man is that when he wants intimacy, he says it. He has no problem. He's going to tell her what he wants. But the woman, when she has desires when it comes to intimacy, she doesn't express it overtly. She hints it. And there's even a halacha revolving around this. The halacha says the man has a biblical mitzvah to express his affection, to be intimate with his wife on certain occasions. There's a schedule for a couple, depending on how busy a husband and a wife are. There's a certain minimum that the halacha says if you're doing less than that, you're not showing her your affection to her, depending on their lifestyles. And then the halacha says, but there are other times when you're biblically obligated to show your affection, and those are when you're going off on a journey. So you have to show her, I'm going to miss you. It's hard for me to leave you. When you come back from a journey, you have to show her, I missed you. I couldn't wait to be back with you. The night of mikvah, when she goes to immerse herself. So you show her, look, we haven't been together for 12, 14 days now. I missed you. So these have our biblical mitzvah for the couple to be intimate. And if she shows signs that she's trying to show affection to get closer. So the halacha says, she puts on more perfume, she puts on more jewelry, suddenly she's warmer and friendlier and nicer. She's saying something, and there's a biblical mitzvah for you to get the hint. Now, men aren't built this way. Men are the exact opposite. If you didn't tell me, I'll tease you. Right? If you ask me, should we go this way or that way, I say this way. And then she says, are you sure? So what's a man going to say? Well, do you want the other way? So what does a woman say after a few times you do that to her? She's going to say, why do I have to beg? Right? You guys ever hear that? I don't know if you've had relationships long enough yet. One of the most common claims that women have is, why do I have to beg? And the man is like, you didn't even ask. What are you talking about beg? Ah, but if her nature is such that she wants to hint, she wants you to say you want, so then if you forced her to actually bring it out and say it, so to her, you've made her beg. That's beneath her honor. Whenever I give this class, I get emails from the female listeners, and they tell me, are you for real? The guys really don't get this. And what they really write, which I don't want to hurt your feelings, is, I can't believe guys are so dumb. This is like the common line among women. I'm also so dumb, guys. Don't think I'm much smarter. This isn't in our nature, you know. I could talk about it in theory, but when it happens in practice, us men, we're programmed differently. Tell me what you want, I'll do it. We're very simple. You know, you throw me a hint, and I don't know. And I'm the same way. I'm also a guy. But the female listeners over the years are really shocked by this class. They can't believe that what I'm saying is like men could listen to this and find something new about it, because to them this is so obvious. But to us men, it really isn't. And this takes a lot of training. And there are two steps to the training. Number one is to hear it when it happens. And number two is not to do what your instinct is, which is to tease her, or to continue doing what you want, because if you want different, just say it. But to realize that there is great value to this nature of women, and as we discussed earlier, Hashem didn't do this out of a sense of humor. Meaning, it would be much simpler for men to marry men. I don't know if women would get along with women, but men could get along with men. But Hashem did this so that we each learn from one another. And there is what to be learned from their genteel, from their method of not coming straight out and saying what you want. There's what to be learned. And if we're open to it, so then we will develop our own personalities. We will become a little bit more feminine in a positive way. We will learn the strengths of being able to catch hints, say hints. These are subtleties that men miss, and it doesn't come naturally, and it's hard to catch these things. But when women talk, they catch these subtleties. That's why you could see a woman spending a half hour deliberating. Did he mean this or did he mean that? Did she mean this? Did she mean that? She gave me that look. What did she mean by that look? She did call me. She didn't call me. There are a million calculations when it comes to women's relationships because they talk this language. It's not a clear language. Sometimes they don't even know what they were alluding to. I said jokingly once, and I think that it's true, women were reluctant to admit it, but the women have admitted it's true, that a woman wants you to know what she wants before she knows what she wants. And she wants you to want it more than her because you want it, not because she wants it. So let's take a classical scenario. We'll go back to our case of which restaurant you're going to go to. So you sit down and you say, okay, where are we going? And she says, well, what do you want? So what's the natural male response? I'm happy going for pizza. and what does she say? Okay. What's a better response? I'm not sure I have so much of a preference. What would you prefer? Throw the ball back at her. And what'll she say? She won't give you a definitive answer. Forget that. That's not going to happen. I mean, it might if you've really cornered her too many times and she's fed up with you. If that happens, you know you're in trouble. You know, if she comes out and says, I want falafel, you're a dead man. That's it. You've really cornered her. This is not nice. She's going to say, I'm not sure, falafel, pizza, you know, they both sound good. So now, don't be male here. You have to be considered the female. So what do? You say, gee, I hear falafel and pizza. What do you think is a better idea? You know, we went out to falafel then. Why are men rolling their eyes already? Because this is not a natural conversation for men, but that doesn't matter. You're getting married to be able to give to one another on one another's terms, which means you have to be able to have a conversation like this. For men, it's like, tell me what you want. I'll tell you what I want. We'll reach bottom line. If you want, we'll wrestle over it. We'll do that. Come on, it's very simple. Just tell me what you want, right? Yeah, that's men. Okay, but you're marrying a woman, which is more like, I'm not sure. What do you think? Why don't we discuss it for a half hour? You don't want to discuss it for a half hour, but it takes patience, meaning being that men want the bottom line and women want a conversation, so that takes patience. It doesn't come easy. And it also requires listening. For men, if you ask the question, you want an answer, no? You ask me what I prefer, I'll tell you. No, that's not what she wants. She wants to think it through with you. So that's not natural to you, because male conversation is, you ask the question, I'll give you an answer. No, have a conversation female style. Discuss. What are the benefits of each one? Well, let's see, the pizza will cost 50 shekel. The falafel will cost 45 shekel. But we shouldn't really think about the money, because we get to go out once in 3 months, so those 5 shekel are not what's going to make the difference. What do you think is a better idea? So she'll say, well, I wasn't thinking about the money, but I was thinking, you know, I haven't had a good salad in a long time, but I really don't care. I'm skipping 5 minutes of conversation here. I'm making it very short and easy for you. It doesn't really work that way.
So it sounds like marriage is very complicated.
If you do it right, it is. I'm the last guy to talk, but it sounded like when you said this first class, you know, it's part of the intimacy that looks like. Do you love me? Right? The whole process of where to go, what to go, seems that way. You know, because they could easily also say, let's go for this. And as you said, then you lost it. Then you lost because you didn't have the process, it seems. But again, I am the last guy in this
city.
I can tell you about parenting some things maybe, but this one I found completely.
No. There's always, they can always add onto it. They could be like, oh, but how many times, how often do we do this? Or like, you only do this like once in a while. You know, so like, how do you?
But they're not going to do that because that's not their nature. I want to give you a few examples that you'll run across in married life. Things that she wants that are important to her, and she's not going to tell you. At least not for many years, if ever. She wants you to tell her you like her cooking. She wants to hear the food was tasty. And we discussed already previously that she might say, nah, it's nothing special, it's just a bowl of rice. We had a student here. This was amazing. The guy came to our house and had a bowl of rice. You should have heard this guy go on and on about the rice. I don't remember who it was. I don't remember. You know who it was?
Yeah.
This is the tastiest rice I ever tasted. I never knew that rice could have such skill to it. You know, the texture, the fluffiness. This is amazing. The guy spent 5 minutes complimenting the rice. I was blushing already. But he taught me something. He meant it. He wasn't playing. I think he meant it. Stop. I don't remember who it was. Could be. No, I have no clue. I don't remember. I just remember I was struck. I said, okay, I just got a lesson. So you have to know how to compliment the food. She works hard. It's one of the ways in which she shows her affection. She wants to hear it. She wants to hear that you missed her. She wants to hear that you will miss her, that you do miss her. If you're out at work and you send an SMS, I miss you, that's worth a lot. You start chatting by email, you're going to lose a half hour or an hour of work time. But you send an SMS or you send an email instead of a chat that says, I miss you. You don't have to say that much more than that. She wants to hear that. She's not going to tell you that, but that's what she wants to hear. There's a very important lesson that the Talmud says we learn from the peacock. The Talmud says before the peacock mates, so it spreads all its feathers, and then after it mates, it bows out and walks away. So the Talmud describes the conversation of the peacock before and after mating. The Talmud says, before mating, the peacock spreads all its feathers and tells the female, I'm going to get you this beautiful coat. Look at all these colors. You know what I'm going to make for you afterwards. And then after mating, the peacock bows and says, I'm very sorry. I don't know where to get such a coat. I wish I could get you such a coat. So the Talmud says we have to learn from the peacock. Because if you can express sincerely, I wish I could, so that's worth almost as much as if you did. Because it's not about the mink and the fur coat that you got her. But if you show her, I really want to get you a fur coat, a mink coat, it's Rabbi Akiva telling his wife, when I'll have millions, I will get you a gold crown. And when he had millions, he did. When he became extraordinarily wealthy, he did get his wife a gold crown called the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. But it was good enough that he meant it 22 years earlier when he told her, if I could, I would. So men sometimes think it's about what you get. No, it's about expressing what you want to get. It's about expressing how important you are to me, that I would if I could. If I could, I will. And if I can't, I won't. But I have to express that I want to. So that expression of, I miss you, I will miss you, I missed you today, is crucial to a woman. Because what you're saying is, I know we can't be together every second of the day, but if I could, I would. So that's a very important message. She's not going to tell you, but it's important for her to hear. Touch. We touched on this earlier. We'll touch on it again. Touch is not something that's saved for the bedroom. It's something that's a part of marital life. You do it modestly. It's not supposed to be out in the bus stop. But at home, it's an integral part of married life. Change. Men either don't notice it or think they shouldn't comment about it. She has a new hairdo, and her husband won't say a word for 3 weeks, if at all.
A new what?
A hairdo. You know, her hair was combed this way, now it's combed that way. Her hair was straight, and now it's in curls. She got a new wig. She got a new hair covering. She put on new earrings. She got new perfume. Whatever it is, she changes something in the cooking. She got a new spice. She got a new recipe. Husbands are very good. I don't know why they have this tendency of not saying anything. Women will often say, I could walk out here in a sack. He wouldn't know the difference. I think that many men really don't notice. They have to get used to noticing. And then there's this tendency of men. This is the area where men become a toveya balev. They're happy internally, but they're not going to say anything. I don't know what it is about men that they don't want to say something. But she's waiting, she's yearning to hear something. Yeah?
Because if you notice the change, they tend to take it if what was before wasn't good enough, and you like this. So if you compliment her on her hair, or her cooking, or whatever, what comes back at you more often than not was, what, was it okay before? You prefer the new way? The old way, my food wasn't good? And did it look nice for you? And you just don't say anything. You pretend you don't notice. Safer.
It's
defense.
Safer. I gotta say, I can hear what you're saying. If you don't say nothing, that's not good either, for sure.
I think
gotta take great care. It's best to be the right person yourself, but to marry the best person you can possibly find to begin with, both. And be the best person. I mean, you know, everyone's human, but obviously, it'll be more challenging. That's a whole other story.
I think it's a question of how you say it. You learn with time. There's definitely, you know, she puts on a new hairdo and you say, now you look human. Yeah, okay, that's not going to get you too many points. But if she has a new hairdo and you say, wow, that's so refreshing, that's so nice. And then she says, and how was it before? Well, that was also great. And which do you like better? I'm not sure. We'll tell you. You know, so women change. Women do things. They put on something new they haven't worn in ages. React to it. And it's the same thing with your daughters. It's not only your wife. And the same thing, again, we said in cooking, in perfume, in jewelry, in clothing, in arranging the house. A woman will change the whole house over, and the husband walks in, sees it. He's not sure if he likes it or doesn't like it. So he says, okay, I'm not saying a word. And she's waiting. She's sitting there, you know, she's ready to plot. Didn't he notice? So he feels the safest thing is like, oh, you moved the table from this room to that room. You've been sitting eating supper at this room for 20 years, but now it's in the other room. You didn't notice that, right? Time. So there are things that a woman wants about time she's not going to tell you, or at least not in the beginning, and that's time. It's time in the bedroom, it's time sitting at supper, it's time talking, it's time even when you're prohibited. The Gemara says, we'll still discuss this, about the importance of taking time before you go to sleep to have idle chatter before you go to sleep. Just talking, and it has nothing to do with whether you're permitted and the beds are together or you're prohibited and the beds are separate. It's that time before you go to sleep together. and time to express feeling, meaning, again, men are very tachlis-oriented, okay, what's your point? And women want a little bit of time where you're going to say something to the effect of that must have been pretty hard. Expressing feelings, men aren't good at that. We're still going to have a broader discussion of this, but that's another area where she's not going to tell you, but she wants it. She wants you to take the time to share her feelings, to express how you feel about what she went through. So these are a few things we touched on. What we discussed today, let's summarize. We discussed it takes one to tango. We discussed that sometimes, yeah, you're the guy, thanks to you, the house is running. We discussed that as much as you're giving, she's giving more, but the nature of man is not to appreciate it. With that story about the guy who leaves in the morning and everyone's sleeping calmly, comes back at night and everyone's sleeping calmly, but he doesn't realize what the day in between looked like, and that's the way us men are. We mentioned how we know very well what we want. We don't begin to understand what she wants, and it's more difficult because her nature is that she is yearning internally and doesn't express it externally. Why are you so complicated? Why don't you just spell it out to me? Why didn't you say that in the first place that was what you wanted? These are illegitimate claims that a man can have against a woman because that's her nature. So you have to remember the story of the path. She's alluding. You have to pick up your antennas and catch the hints. When you catch the hints, you have to be kind and understanding and have the conversation in a way that you are also you're entertaining what she wants, and you lead the conversation in a way where you'll find out what she wants. We discussed that this is their method of communication. We discussed that this is relevant to the biblical mitzvah of ona, of showing your affection and intimacy. We discussed viewing it with a positive eye, that this is part of her tzniut, this is part of her modesty, that she doesn't say things overtly. We gave a few examples where it's relevant, be it complimenting her food, her dress, expressing that you missed her, that you miss her now, touch in the bedroom, out of the bedroom, noticing change in her clothing and her jewelry, etc., taking the time to talk, time to express feelings. We said the story of the peacock, the importance of saying, I wish I could, and that's the great message. You do what you can, but to show that you really want to as much as you can.